went down to Melbourne again last week. Oh, hang on. Before we forget, you have to talk about Tommy this week.
Tommy will be mentioned in my portion of the show in the back half.
But you got to tell the story about the reunion.
It'll be in there. It'll be in there. I'll mention it.
Okay. Oh, so it's
properly up.
We've got a double feature coming up. We got that and something else.
Well, full disclosure, Tommy texted me and was like, hey, since we caught up, I've been listening to your podcast and now I'm in it. That's weird. And I was like, oh, fair enough. I didn't expect that.
Are you not wanting any, like, you don't want the podcast to be too Tommy heavy now that we've got a new listener? We can't do that. We can't afford this luxury to every new listener, just have episodes dedicated to
it. Well, it's unfair, right? We can't be like, welcome to TommyCast episode 200 this week. Like, I don't think that's a reasonable.
Yeah. Yeah, someone else lets us know. Oh, I just found your other podcast. Okay, great. We have to do the next five. Oh, we have to do a five-parter explaining the entire background, the entire relationship. All right, I understand.
The ultimate
we do have to get across
tier,
that
yeah.
story, because we never do. We never actually follow up on the things that we say we're going to. Right? It's like, oh yeah, we'll talk about this, and then we never do. We still don't have an update about the bathroom situation at your work with the taps.
Oh yeah, yeah, I forgot. Okay. Next week.
Anything for us on that one? Next week. Yeah. Anyway, so went down to Melbourne. Had a good time, caught up with my mum and sister, right? And we went to some Korean fried chicken. Very, very,
very good.
Just extremely excellent. Oh my goodness. It was honestly the best fried chicken I've had in Australia, because obviously, you know, as much respect as I have for the culinary culture of Korea, their fried chicken has got nothing on America, obviously. But it was still
just
very
a different
good.
Thing, right? It's like American pizza and Italian pizza. They're just different.
Yes, one is clearly better. Yes, I agree. I agree with what you're saying. The Americans took an existing food and made it much, much better because they are the best at eating in the world. So, you know, they're obviously going
to
do it.
I suppose that's hard to argue with.
Possible. Very hard to argue with. Dennis, as I've always said, the Americans eat like they've got free healthcare. And I don't think anyone's challenging them for that particular crown. Anyway, we went to an art gallery afterwards. And there was a big reason for why we decided to go to this art gallery. You know me pretty well, Dennis. How high would you gauge my general interest in art galleries?
Well, you're interesting because you live at a cross section where I would say you are quite interested in, I'd say even, dare I say, very interested in going to museums, but not art museums or art galleries.
Definitely not. I would say
you're an artifacts guy.
Even an art museum filled with like old art, like good art, right? I still would be like, yeah, okay, I guess I'm not that excited about it, right? Mm-hmm. So, can you guess the reason that we went to this museum in particular? Why did we go to this museum at this time?
It would have. Oh, it's free, isn't it?
Yeah, it was free. Yeah, they're free entry, baby. Needed something to do with my mum and my sister, and so we went to the museum because it was free. No, the interviewee was holding a thing called a triennial. I don't know what that is, a triennial. It's like it certainly hasn't been around for 300 years. There have been...
That's a tricentennial. Has it been around for 3 years?
It's been around for a lot longer than 3 years. It's been around for about 160? I don't know. I really don't know what triennial means. I could have looked it up. I didn't. But here we are. So the NGV has a bunch of permanent exhibits, right? It's the National Gallery of Victoria, and it has a bunch of permanent exhibits. But for the triennial, they had a bunch of
special. It just means every 3 years, which means they do a special exhibit clearly every 3 years.
Ah, right. Okay, so it's a special event, right? Some of this was just extremely cool, right? So we'll do a compliment sandwich, right? We're going to start with the good stuff. There's a lot of meat in this compliment sandwich. I will say that.
Okay.
We'll start off with a compliment. It's one of those ones where they
hollow out the bagel, so it's fewer carbs, right? It's one of those.
Exactly. Yes. There's a lot of filling, but I wouldn't even call it art as anything, right? So whatever. But I wouldn't call it an art exhibit. It was more just a display of these like Boston Dynamics style dog robots doing really cool things.
Okay, that's a little scary to me. It gives me slightly Terminator vibes personally, but go ahead.
So they were going around, they were like, you know, dancing and prancing, going upstairs, flipping and doing all sorts of other cool stuff. But then they had this little exhibit where they could pick up, I don't know what it was, like a crayon almost sort of looking thing, and would draw, like art. Like they would draw on the wall. And that was kind of cool. I guess it's just programming a robot to do something, so... But I thought it was cool. I enjoyed watching that, and Mum was mystified. Like, Mum's nearly 70. A robot walking around on all fours for her is like, yeah. She's adapted to the future pretty well. Like, she can send a text message and an email and whatever else, but robots walking around and like picking up chalk and drawing on blackboards, that to her was Hoo boy, right? That was something else. Another thing I don't know if the right word is enjoyed, but another thing I was very interested to see, right?
Exposed to one of the films I've ever seen vibes here.
No, it is interesting. And I guess, this is what people say the point of art is to inspire discussion and debate. But I was quite surprised by this because one of the exhibits was just AI art, right?
But presented
as actual proper highbrow, serious, like to consider art. And it was not very good in any respect, right? So first of all, it was poor quality AI art. So people had too many fingers, the teeth were all jacked, like the writing was all messed up. So immediately, like the AI art is getting better and better. Obviously, it's harder and harder to spot now. But like this was obviously made a year ago, I would guess, but where it just looked bad.
Mm-hmm.
But then on top of that, right, the art was the sort of thing that you might submit for like a high school art project when you're like 14. Because it was AI generated art of riots being put down by police in front of like Australian landmark, like Melbourne land. Like there's a violent riot being put down by police in front of Federation Square, which is like the main, like a big square in Melbourne. And obviously we don't, we're not America. We don't have these violent riots here. Australia's a relatively safe and peaceful country. But it was just the sort of thing. It's like, it made me think that this is the sort of thing I would have submitted at the age of 14, thinking I was being very edgy.
And like, it could happen here too. Kind of. Yeah.
We're not so different. And I was kind of baffled by that was put up in a very prestigious art gallery as something that was meant to be like thought provoking or taken seriously. It was.
It provoked thought. I mean, I don't know. There's different. So I know what we're getting to because of what we talked about a little bit in the Patreon exclusive pre-portion of the show, patreon.com/listen to this, but I think, and you alluded to it a little bit, right? You're like, art's meant to make you talk about things and think things, right? There's a separate like moral issue about like AI art and plagiarism and prompting and all this sort of stuff. Putting that aside, though, even if you thought it looked bad or was a bit lazy or a bit crap and it was weird to take it seriously, I think if it made you be like, oh, it's stuck with you and struck something with you, I think that's plenty, right?
Sure, but the reason I'm talking about this is because it was very amateurish. It was a very amateurish job done by, like, dealing with a topic that is just so, like, banal. I don't know. So, it didn't feel like it deserved to be there in any way. It felt very fraudulent. And in a way that is, because we're going to come to what is, in my opinion, the most fraudulent work of art of all time. But it's so, like, pants-on-head fraudulent that that's obviously the point of it, whereas this was meant to be seen, I think, as, like, highbrow and very serious. And I just, it completely missed, right? Anyway, let's get into the meat of this here. There was an art installation by Yoko Ono, apparently, which involved a table, a bunch of paper, and some pencils. And you had to come and write something about your mum and put it, and then sticky tape it to the wall. Now,
when did you attend this already? Was this last Friday? Perhaps you attended this.
No, on Monday.
Because last Friday we're talking Mother's Day, International Women's Day weekend.
Yeah,
so that's probably the reasoning for that. I would say
sure, but I don't want to have a go at Yoko Ono. There's lots of people who've already taken care of their.
I want to go at Yoko Ono. I don't like Yoko Ono at all. Brief aside, well, that's terrible. I don't like her at all.
Sure. We can, that's as maybe. It wouldn't matter who the artist was. A bit lazy. What, you expect us to make the installation for you, mate? Not even getting paid for it.
Crowdsourcing, yeah.
Yeah. What do we do? We come into the studio and do a painting for you as well, Yoko, mate? What's this about? Doing all the work for you?
To be fair, unbelievable. You didn't get paid for it. You also didn't pay for it. That's before we get on that high horse.
Yeah. But still, it's my labor. I'm being exploited. I had to write something as well because mum was there. So I had to.
Yeah. I would say your mum's exploring you really then.
We'll leave this. Well, we'll move on. We'll leave this. Anyway.
Hang on. Did it say something? Write something nice about your mum or just something about your mum?
No, there was some really horrible shit in there, man. There was some really dark stuff that I was interested to see because obviously, not everyone has the best relationship with their mum. Mum pointed one out to me. This is the tip of the iceberg. Mum found one that she was like, oh. It was, Mum, I wish you would stop telling me I needed to lose weight. Oish. And Yeah, that was certainly on the nicer side of some of the stuff that was written there. But I would say the overwhelming majority of it was very, very nice. It was obviously very positive.
I would love idea that the prompt is like, write something nice about your mom. And your mom's like, oh, go on, Riley, write something down. And you're sitting there.
Yeah.
Couple of minutes go by.
Well, I'm sure you can guess what I did. I ran into the very safe arms of hiding my feelings behind irony, obviously. I wasn't going to put anything too earnest down there. And so I wrote, Loretta, bad cook, decent artist, wonderful mum.
I would have gone for the best mum I've ever had.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Some people have had more than one mum. Some people have many mums, I suppose, technically.
Yeah, with some people, that's a real dig. But for me...
That's true, actually. Yeah, it depends on how many places that podium goes down, I guess. That's true.
Yeah. Anyway, Dennis, we come now to the meat in the compliment sandwich, or should I say the banana, because I was lucky enough to go to the NGV and see the Maurizio Cattelan masterpiece, Comedian.
That's unironically a very famous piece of art.
It is. It's a very famous piece of art, and if you don't know what it is, if you've never seen it, it is the piece of art where a banana has been duct taped to a wall. Now, I have so many questions about not just this artwork, right? Because I kind of get it. It's designed to be provocative. It's designed to make people think, oh, what is art? Can art just be a banana taped to a wall, right? What I want to know is its role in this exhibit, right? Because, Dennis, if I were to open a gallery myself, right? The Sunshine Coast International Gallery of Modern Art, right? You're the chief curator, Riley Knight, proud to present opening night, right? Catalan's Comedian. One of the most famous pieces of modern art in the world. If I go and sticky tape a banana to, do a duct tape banana to a wall, now I've got this piece of art in my gallery. Do I not?
So there's two things here. One, this is like a banana Theseus deal, right?
Explicitly, Catalan says that the banana should be changed every week or so.
That's what I was going to say. They get changed by museum staff, not by him. You know?
Not by him. He doesn't have to be there at all. He didn't have to put the banana. Was he the one who put the banana on the wall in the first place?
Well, the very first one, yes, I assume. You seen any? I believe so. Yeah. Oh, sorry. I mean, in the Guggenheim or whatever. Not for the training.
Sure, but that's what I'm saying. In the NGV, like, have they just been like, oh, we got this. We've got all the rooms finished. There's just one, and the room it was in was enormous, and there was nothing else in it. Right? It was just this great big white empty wall with the banana sticky taped to one of it. You can go and see pictures of it, or you can just imagine it. It's not going to make any difference. But did they fly him out from where he lives in the United States? Well, did they fly him out from the US to put the original banana on? Say, oh, this is, all right, everyone, watch very closely. This is how you do it, first of all, and this is where I want it to be.
So
you don't need him there for the art for the artwork to exist.
No, you don't. I suppose no.
So what I want to do, quite seriously, is go and get a fake banana, right? Because I'm not. Who can be bothered changing it every week? And go and sticky tape a banana, and all of a sudden, to a wall in my house, and all of a sudden, I've got Comedian. I've got one of the world's most famous artworks in my house.
Well, you have to license it.
Do I?
Yep, some guy sued him. Joe Morford sued him for copyright infringement because he thought it was too derivative of his work in 2000 called Banana and Orange.
Banana and Orange. So, okay, so Catalan cut out the orange there and thought that was enough, right?
I want the Catalan cut here, yeah. But I think so. That implies there is like a copyright law for art in this sense, right? Which means that presumably this Victoria, Melbourne Gallery, licensed it in some capacity.
Yeah,
I'm sure you could. I would love the idea that the gift shop sells prints and it's just a bucket of bananas and a roll of duct tape.
That would be very good. Yeah, do it yourself at home prints. Yeah, that would be great. Well, they sell t-shirts and hats and everything else. I was tempted, and then I realized, no, this is exactly what the whole thing is about. I'm now beginning to realize, I think just through this conversation, it's really starting to dawn on me, I actually really like this piece of art.
Okay, amazing.
The more that I talk about it, because it irritates the hell out of me, but the more that I talk about it, the more I realize,
you know,
the more we have this discussion, the more I realize I'm actually very into it. and what it's doing.
Maybe you should stick it up on the wall then. Do it yourself.
Maybe I will. Maybe I will. It's and it'll be a fake banana as well, so it'll be quite literally a counterfeit.
A counterfeit? That's very, very strong.
I've got a Catalan. I've got a Catalan counterfeit.
Have you seen any of his other work that he's famous for?
What's do I ever want to know? Was this the urinal guy?
Close.
Yes. No. Toilet guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Salt. But to be fair, this it's an 18 karat solid gold toilet, and the piece that is worked. Titled America.
Yeah.
So at least he's saying something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know. It was like this. It was plumbed in, and you could actually use it. Which I would have absolutely loved to do. That would have been fantastic.
It was stolen.
Yeah, I remember this. Yeah, didn't they offer to? I think there was a stoush between the museum that it was in and Trump, because Trump was like, "Oh, can I borrow this piece of work to put in the White House while he was there?" And the museum was like, "No, but we'll give you Catalan's America if you want."
That's funny.
I would have snapped it off. I would have been like, "Absolutely, give me it."
Yeah, but surely he can go and grab it from Whole Foods for $5, roll of duct tape and a banana.
No. They offered in the toilet.
So you said they offered him a comedian. Oh, you want a comedian? They offered him America.
They offered him No. He wanted something else. He wanted some other, I don't know, probably some picture of like from American history.
Oh, I see. Okay, I thought they were like, wanted the toilet, and they offered him the banana.
No, he wanted something else. This might not be true. This might be apocryphal. I don't know. In any case, so many questions about the legitimacy of this work, right? Given that the artist doesn't actually have to be involved in any way other than, I guess, the legal sense.
Right. If you go see the Mona Lisa, that canvas was painted on by Leonardo da Vinci, whereas the comedian you saw might not have even shared a continent with this guy at any point, right?
No. And certainly the one that was up there when I went wasn't, because they have to change it every week. And the banana that I went and saw looked pretty fresh.
I wonder if it's different to see it on a Thursday or whatever. Yeah, because it must brown, right?
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if they mix up the banana changing day, or if it's written into the schedule, the weekly schedule for the staff at the NGV.
I don't know. It's like seeing a movie in IMAX, though. It's like, oh, did you see Dune? Yeah. Would you see it? Oh, I saw it in the cinema. Oh, you got to see the banana on a Thursday, dude. It's a totally different experience. Yeah. Like, honestly, I would recommend it.
So I don't. You might be surprised to learn I don't have a lot of time for modern art. I think it's mostly nonsense, right? Like one of the famous works of art at the NGV is that one that's just like red, just like it's called Untitled Red, and it's like three red bars or whatever. Even less impressive for me as someone who's colorblind, and I just think that's just such a
three brown bars.
It's such a piss take, man. But at least like Catalan, he knows what he's doing. The guy who did the red bars, I bet he's like, oh, this actually really is proper good art. Whereas Catalan's is like, no, banana on a wall, art, great. What are you going to do about it? You're going to say it's not art? No, it is. You know, I like that. I think that's a lot more...
There's more honesty to
taking
it, right?
Ownership. Yeah, that's it. There's more honesty to what he's trying to say with that piece. And for that reason, I think I'm a fan of it. But modern art is just such nonsense most of the time, dude. I don't have any time for it. Come on, get out of town.
And you have to divorce it, right? So like... It's typical, like if I go to like an art gallery, Nikki is much more for museums and art galleries than I am. But if I go and I look, I love I love a nice big painting of like a sea battle or like a bunch of guys riding on horses or like something with a lot of the sort of like Renaissance-y action heavy paintings or even just like a nice like landscape with some trees or whatever. And I look at it and I go, if I spent the rest of my life trying to learn how to paint something like this, I don't think I could.
Yeah.
Right?
And that's where we spent most of the time when we were in the gallery. We went through the old, we went and saw the Dutch masters. There's a couple of Rembrandts there, that sort of thing. And I enormously enjoyed that so much more, right, than looking at the stupid, anyway, go on.
But if humanity has to do that for a couple hundred years, right?
Yeah.
You got to start floating further afield. If you're like, okay, what can I say? What feeling can I make somebody feel that isn't just, wow, aren't those some amazing brushstrokes? Because I'm standing on the shoulders of 500 years of amazing brushstrokes or 2,000 years of amazing wood strokes. Or
wow,
whatever,
let's not get carried away. Let's not get carried away.
Yeah, that's probably too high.
But, I don't know. I didn't find... And the other thing... Well, here's the other thing I want to talk about, right, very briefly. There was a Rembrandt that was thought to be They don't know who the bloke is, right? A reasonably wealthy merchant, probably from the Netherlands, because that's who commissioned these sorts of paintings. Anyway, mm-hmm. So it's a bloke. He's got his wig on. He's wearing his nice black robes with a white collar. And one of his hands are by his sides. One of them is in full view, and the other one is slightly off to the side of the painting, right? And a couple of his fingers have sort of been cropped out, I guess is the best way you could say it, right? Okay. So I look at that, I'm like, okay, it's just a nice portrait of someone, right? Let me read you the description. Portraits of individuals and groups represent almost two-thirds of Rembrandt's oeuvre. This painting is an outstanding example of the artist's late style and is the second last portrait he made only 2 years before his death. Interesting, informative, and I look at that and I go, I agree, this is an outstanding example, right? Although advanced in age, Rembrandt here is still experimenting with technique and form. The sitter's right hand is cropped, symbolic of a life beyond the picture frame, and his pose is dynamic. Mm. No, mate, he's just sitting there and his hand was off to the side. It's not suggestive of a... he's not sitting dynamically. He's just sitting and having his portrait taken because he had enough money to ask Rembrandt to do it for him. Rembrandt has also used the sharp end of his brush to gouge the paint in the sitter's hair, which adds to the lively appearance of this as yet unidentified sitter. Right?
Part's okay. That part's reasonable. That's more about technique. I'm okay with that.
But it's... like, they will look for stuff that just isn't there, right? And they'll be like, oh, this is a desperate and earnest depiction of the disharmony faced by the artist. It's like, no, it's not. It's just a nice picture, all right? Stop wanking all over it. It's just a nice picture.
I do get frustrated with that sometimes. Like, especially, like, you often hear people make fun of, like, English teachers for that, where it's like, the curtain was blue, and it happens, it's like, yeah, okay, the curtain was blue. Why are we doing this? I do think, again, it's like Rembrandt, very well-studied artist. It has to get a little cyclical after a while. You got to start looking for stuff that isn't necessary.
They're looking for a new angle. They're looking for a new angle. I get it. Yeah, I get it. Yep.
Especially when it's a portrait that a guy just paid for, you know? Rembrandt wasn't moved to paint this by something. It's just he was commissioned and, you know,
I'm sure
it's a beautiful portrait, but still, like...
Just be honest with us. Be honest with us. Don't try to sell us something. This is the issue. Like, I think art critics or art snobs, they think that things have to be incomprehensible to be worth something, and it doesn't. A nice piece of art can just be a nice piece of art because it's nice to look at. That is enough. Anyway.
I don't think that's an unpopular opinion.
Yeah. I'm not coming in super hot here with this.
No, it's like the idea that art should be accessible, and yeah, there's definitely an element of, like, you know, I'm trying to think, like, gatekeeping, obviously, and, like, you have to have studied and read all of these books to understand. But no, I think if you look at a painting and it makes you feel something, and it isn't necessarily what the artist intended for you to feel, that's not any less valid.
No,
death of the artist and all that.
Yep, I don't think so at all. And I've even just within the time we've been recording this, I think I've realized that my opinion on Comedian is not what I thought it was to begin with. I think I've gone from, like, irritation and derision to actually, like, no, I get it. It's clever and it's funny and it's designed to make you think. But that's because, as you say, there's a level of honesty to it. Maybe I will stick it on my wall. Maybe I will. I don't know. I might get a fake banana and just stick it sticky tape to the wall somewhere. Maybe in the toilet. That'd be good.
Above it, spray paint your toilet gold.
Yeah. Yeah. Two counterfeits for the price of one, dude. Yeah.
Ronnie, I want to talk to you also about making art. And it is in a way, and I shouldn't have opened with that line, but here we go.
I'm really interested to see how you bring this back to a good friend, Tommy Colon. How's this going to happen?
Well, I went and hung out with Tommy Colon. Funny you should use the term colon, actually, because I want to follow up. We did go over to Tommy and Juliet's house. It was lovely. They had a little kitten they were fostering.
Hang on, is this the first reunion? You got to tell us about the reunion. What was the reunion?
The reunion was, Tommy came over during the pandemic and we had a drink and FaceTime for a little bit. But then we went and had a proper, like, sit-down chat. I introduced him to Nikki, who's my wife. I reunited with Juliet, who I know from school as well. And they've been together since we were in, like, fifth year or whatever. I would consider that the reunion majeure, right?
Okay. And Juliet was the head girl or the prefect?
I don't we were all prefects. I think Juliet might have been head girl. If Tommy listens to this, he can.
And you were a prefect. Dennis, tell us more about that.
We talked about that last weekend, Riley.
All right. Okay. So you've since caught up with Tommy again.
No. No. I've spoken to him, but like not. We haven't had another get together, right?
Okay.
I really don't want this to turn into the Tommy cast, by the way.
This is now Tom. This is the Tommy podcast, bringing you the latest and greatest news from the life of famed singer songwriter Tommy Cullen. Right. This is a Tommy Cullen fan cast. I want to hear the story you're going to tell us last week.
Last week, I was going to talk about how we went over to their house. They had adopted, they're fostering a little kitten who has a disease, which I've forgotten the name of. Juliet's a vet, so she would know. It basically makes her incredibly uncoordinated, the cat, right?
Oh, cute. It's very sad, but also cute.
Every step she takes is like a baby deer learning to walk.
Oh, no, that's so sweet, like, though.
Trying to jump up onto things is a gamble, bumps into things all the time. It's adorable.
Poor little kitten.
They named her Daisy, as in Oopsie Daisy. Very strong.
Oh, that's even... Oh, mate. Oh, wow. That's very sweet. Okay, yeah.
But we were hanging out there, and Daisy was up on Juliet's lap or whatever, and like stood up, and I went like... I was like, oh, it looks like there's a little bit of poop hanging off Daisy. She got a little dingleberry, right?
Yeah.
A little bit of poop hanging off the cat's butt. Happens.
That's good. This is good.
And she was like, I think she's okay. And just didn't see it. And I was like, okay. And the cat jumped off and hung around or whatever. And I was like, maybe I won't make a trick of the light.
Yes. You know who you sound like, Dennis? You sound like a guard in a stealth game going, oh, must have been the wind. Like, it's not a trick of the light.
With an arrow sticking out of my head, yeah.
Yeah.
Catch him up on Nikki's lap, and I get a good look at this thing, and I'm like, there's just like a half a turd hanging out of this cache. It's like, I wasn't wrong earlier. And Tommy sends up and he goes, oh, let me, and he was like, oh God, that is way bigger. He's like, I thought you might have meant like she had like a little bit of a dirty butt. She's like, no, this cat is like an unconnected, like, rope hanging out of her butt. And he was like, this is so embarrassing. He's like, I wish you'd like spoken up harder the first time. I just didn't see it.
That's so good, dude. So this was the first time you'd seen these two in how long?
I'd call it 10 years in reality. Yeah.
Wow, 10 years, and this is how you're treated by your old school friends. They get their cat to shit all over.
They were extremely gracious hosts. I will have you know, big ups, Tommy and Juliet as hosts. I've been to other friends' houses where the hosting is not very gregarious. Let's name some names.
Let's name some names. No. Let's not do names. But what about initials?
I'll name a name.
Oh, let's Steve name some McManus, names.
Big call out. Bad host for board games. I'll put it out there right now. He's never going to listen.
Oh, I think you've talked about this guy before. This is the guy who expected to keep the snacks that were brought over.
That is correct. No, he didn't expect to keep them. I brought over some crisps. He didn't put them out. And then when I was leaving, he's like, "Do you want your crisps back?" I was like, "I guess."
Yes, right. That's right. Yeah, he was like, "Oh, let me store these for you, like a coat, like a jacket, and kept in the bedroom."
Yeah, I'm surprised I didn't get a little ticket. Yeah, so Stephen McManus, shout out that time. Bad.
What about other Steve?
It wasn't even bad. It was so weird.
The other Steve that you're a bit closer to? Other Steve.
Steve usually comes over here. Hit Steve's kitchen. Riley, you thought my bathroom was bad. I'll tell you about Steve's kitchen next week. Oh man, maybe I'll put him on blast.
We're not going to get back to Steve's kitchen. We're never going to get back to it. Don't get your hopes up.
Well, Steve's in the middle of legal proceedings about his kitchen, so we might have to wait a little bit.
Oh, we can't talk about a case currently in front of the courts.
Exactly.
I'm so intrigued by this now.
The crux I wanted to get to via the Tommy Cullen story is after chatting with Tommy, we did movies, and I put a movie in the jar that I am in, Riley, that I'm not sure I've talked to you about.
You're in the movie or the jar?
The movie. I'm in the movie.
You're in a movie.
I am in a movie. Tommy is in the movie a lot, actually.
Is Tommy also in this movie?
Tommy's also in this movie. Tommy and I have a scene together. I have a line.
You have a line in a movie? Dennis, you're a Hollywood A-lister, and you've never told me in our entire friendship.
Well, I don't have an IMDb page. Slow down. Although I think Tommy actually technically does because of it.
Guess who else does? Dude. Guess who else has an IMDb page?
Do you?
I'll give you a hint. They're on this call right now, and it's not you.
What? For what?
For the podcast, of all things. It's so weird. There's an IMDb page for my podcast, and they're for me, the host, as well.
It's oh, weird. Yeah, I'll send really you. I'll send you. This is the film that I feature in, Riley. I don't think I'm even credited, but I am in it.
Like Kevin Spacey in Seven. Yeah.
No, I don't think they were trying to keep me under wraps so as not to spoil the movie.
It's like we can't let people know that Straniak's in this one. We got to keep it on. We got to keep it quiet. Yeah. All right, I'm loading it up now. This is taking ages for some reason. Okay, IMDb. Oh boy, Stitches, and it's wow. Me. It's very good. It's rated 5. Look, let's just say that. Okay, here's what I'll say. No, here's what I'll say. Here's what I'll say. The film, right, has a rating on IMDb. There is the little icon of a star, and then the closest thing, the closest number to that icon is 5. 5 stars in the rating.
It's a 5-star film?
It's a 5-star film.
It is not a particularly critically acclaimed film.
Let's just have a talk about this, because, like, generally speaking, 5 stars. That's what the producers of a film are desperately hoping for when a film is released, right? Five stars. That's what they're looking for. Yeah. This one's got 5.7. This one's got 6. So that's even better.
Dude, this sounds like. This sounds like that bit in The Flight of the Conchords where it's like 2 stars. How many? Instead of 100.
Yeah. Instead of 100. Don't tell anyone news. So this is a Ross Noble joint. I'm a big fan of Ross Noble.
Oh, you should watch the movie. I'm in it a good amount. It's because I put it in the jar and I was like, oh, I have a couple. I'm like in the background of a couple of shots. I'm watching. I was like, I'm in this film more than I remember. Now, to be fair, we were looking for me. I will admit. I think if you watch the movie in a vacuum, you wouldn't be like, oh, that's that movie Dennis was in ever. But... it is a fun Where's Waldo. Also, I'm a big dude. I'm wearing a bright pink shirt for a lot of the movie and like the scene. And like there's so many like shot, reverse shot where I'm in both of them. And it's like, well, that's poor continuity. No,
that doesn't work. Yeah. They had to double up on the background artists. So Tommy Cullen does have an IMDb page. Because obviously, let's not forget our roots as a Tommy Cullen fan cast. Stitches 2012 and Our Lives 2016. Now, that one's 8 stars. My goodness. That one must be really good.
I have no idea what this is.
Yeah, I don't know either.
It's supposed to be some sort of documentary series.
Celebrating the diversity of our society across the British Isles through people sharing their extraordinary stories. I got an angry email from an Irish listener to Half-Assed History because in a recent episode, I described Ireland as being in the British Isles. Not in the way that I normally do to wind up Nikki, right? Just in the sense that it is literally geographically the British Isles, right? In terms of talking about the dominance of England across the British Isles more broadly make the point that, you know, the English were making incursions into Scotland, into Wales, and also into Ireland. And they didn't like that. They said it's improper, I think, to describe Ireland as being part of the British Isles. And I was like, well, I don't know. I didn't want to go all Ben Shapiro on them, but it did really feel like a facts don't care about your feelings moment there, because how else do you want me to describe it? Like,
you could call it the UK and Ireland if you wanted.
But it wasn't the UK and Ireland. It was England.
But you could I know.
The UK didn't exist. It was England. It was England overtaking a geographic region. I guess I could have said Britain and Ireland, Great Britain and Ireland, I guess is what I could have said.
Yeah.
Anyway, I apologize. I apologize to all the Seamuses out there, all the Aoifers out there. 1,000 pardons. Anyway, so where are we at? What's tell us about this film? What's going on with Stitches?
So this was they came to our school when I was in a fifth year, maybe sixth year, I don't know. And they did auditions. A bunch of the kids who did theater auditioned. I didn't get any major parts. Obviously, I wasn't as talented as Tommy and Hugh are. And they got pretty big parts in this film. And then we all got basically what materialized for me was you could take like a full week off school to go hang out on a film set in this house in Wicklow. Sick. Which was class. Get up very early for like the bus to take you there and stuff, because like some of the scenes took place at night, so you'd be there like very early in the morning or very late at night and stuff, which is pretty grueling for like, you know, obviously no pay and no credit, but you know, you're 16, like this is fun and it's not maths.
You're doing it for the art. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Look, it's available to like rent on Apple TV and stuff. I would recommend. I think you should go and watch it. And if enough people listen to the podcast, go and do it. Some old machine is going to spool up somewhere, and so it's going to be like, "Why is this spiking right now?"
Why don't we let's Morbius this film into existence? Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I don't know if Tommy's still getting residual checks from it. I'd be surprised, but you never know.
Oh, look, Ross Noble will be gracious. I'm sure. You know, real estate in Perth or wherever he lives isn't cheap. So I'm sure he lives in Australia, I think.
Isn't he from like Newcastle or something?
Yeah, he's a Geordie, but he lives or did live over here for a long time, because who was it? I think it was my mum ran into him at one point, and I was like, "Are you Ross Noble?" And he goes, "Yes, I am," and then walked on. I think it was my mum.
Yeah, I heard that story from someone. He moved to the Mornington Peninsula.
Oh, so he lives near Melbourne, not in Perth. Oh, no, it's Ben Folds who sometimes lives in Perth. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because he always does like massive gigs at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. Yeah, I think he married an Australian.
He did. His wife is Australian. And then his house was destroyed by Victorian bushfires in 2009, along with all of his material possessions. Jesus.
That's very sad. That's very sad. Oh, I wonder how he spun that into comedy in the coming years. So my house burned down last summer.
When he was shooting this movie in 2011, 2010, or whatever, that actually explains a lot.
Because the film looks like a horror film.
It is. It's a horror comedy film. It's not scary, but it's very, very gory, I would say.
Right. Okay. So it's like a slasher.
It is 100%. Yeah. And the guy who directed it clearly fancies himself a bit of an Irish Edgar Wright in terms of how it's edited and stuff.
Sure. Okay. All right.
It's fun. I don't know. I don't know that I'd call it good, but I would call, you know, much like the banana on the wall, Riley, it is one of the films I've ever seen. And I have a vested interest in it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know, Dennis. I'll be honest with you. I'm probably not going to watch it.
It's not Bellatro. It's not Deathloop, you know.
No, well, both came very highly recommended to me by Dennis. And I wonder if I'll finish Bellatro before you ever do. But hang on, tell us more about this experience of being on the film. What were you doing? What are your scenes? What's your line? Do you still remember your line?
My line, well, I remember because I watched this movie like 4 days ago with Nikki, Steve, and Jeff.
You did watch it. It came out of the jar.
Oh, yes. We pulled it.
Nice, dude. What was the temperature in the room after it was played? Were they all on the 5.7 stars train or?
Well, no, we gave it a, I think we gave it, well, there's two things, right? We gave it a constant tier, which is a special category reserved for films that are enjoyable to watch, but aren't necessarily good films. You know what I mean?
What do you call it?
Constant tier, after the film Constantine.
Constantine. Okay, good. Yes, 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 yes.
But then, of course, I'm friends with Nikki, Steve, and Jeff on Letterboxd, so I get all those actual, the real reviews pop up 20 minutes later.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure that it was put in that tier to save your feelings, and also to save the feelings of poor old Tommy Cullen, because they all knew that this would be fod of the podcast, right? It would be pod fod, and then that would get back to TC. Soon enough, as a big fan of the show.
Nikki doesn't like horror movies, doesn't like super gory stuff. She gave it 3 stars. And that sounds about right what she gave it, right, at the time. Steve was like, this is great. This is so stupid. 10 out of 10. Give it 4 stars, right? Love that. Very honest.
Okay, stop. Let's back it up there, Dennis. You just said that sentence, right? I did say
10 out of 10, 4 stars.
10 out of 10, 4 stars. Now, is this Roger Ebert's grading system that Steve uses, or what's going on there?
No, Steve. Okay, I'm using 10 out of 10 as an idiom here, I suppose.
Steve, as an idiom for full marks. Film.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm using 10 out of 10 as an idiom for 4 out of 5.
So this is the way that literally doesn't mean literally anymore. 10 out of 10 actually means 4 out of 5.
Very good. All right. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The person I'm frustrated with here is Jeff Riley.
Yeah.
because Jeff how does how
unusual.
Plans.
What an unusual situation for you, Dennis, to be frustrated with Jeff.
Jeff is a chlorophobe among us, right? Terrified of clowns. So this is always going to be a hard sell.
Yeah.
But is the biggest horror movie fan out of the four of us, I would say. And so likes a slashy gory movie, likes a silly movie. Yeah. And this is where the betrayal comes in. He seemed to be like, this was great fun. Oh, I loved this. Mm. 2.5 stars, really. 2.5.
Yeah, because later on, you know, this is the opposite of rose-colored glasses. You know, he goes away. All the good times.
The post-clown clarity sets in.
Yeah, post-clown clarity set in, and he's like, "Oh boy, that was not a good one." Dennis, if anything, you should be very flattered by that, because I think you did a lot of heavy lifting in getting those 2.5 stars on the board from Jeff.
I mean, I only gave it 3 stars, so I can't really punch down that hard. That's why I'm so impressed with Steve's 4. I'm like, hey, okay, I'm in this thing, and I gave it 3 stars.
Do you know what's weird about the 5-star thing, right?
Oh.
Because the five star system in many areas is good or above is 5, and 4 or below is unacceptable, right? Whereas in yet other areas, 4 stars is excellent, 5 stars is incredible, and like once you get down to like 3, 2 stars, you know, it starts being kind of rubbish. But like an Uber driver, you know, even if their rating is like 4.5, you're like, oh boy, what's this guy about? You know?
Some things start with 5 and get marked down, and some things build up to a 5. And some things, like I think I've come around to the point where movies, a 3.5 out of 5 movie, I'm like, all right, sure.
Yeah.
I'll watch that in a plane. Let's go.
I'll watch that. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'll spend my evening watching that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I don't know if any of you should go out there and necessarily spend a ton of money buying DVDs of Stitches, if such a thing even exists. But if you do, end up watching it on Shudder or on the high seas on the internet, keep an eye out for one Dennis Draniak. Does feature more than I remembered in the film, actually.
We're going to find out if this is actually even available on DVD, Dennis, because my guess is it is not.
My guess is it is not, too.
Uh-oh. What's this I found on eBay?
Oh, no.
Oh, dude. It is a... Oh! This is a rarity, man. This is a post-rental version from a Blockbuster-like chain that existed in Australia called Video Easy. That's spelled E-Z-Y, Video Easy. And it has the Video Easy... like logo, all the stuff printed out on the back, videoeasy.com. Video Easy Canning Vale, it's got their trading hours on it and everything. It has, this will really date it, it has the Twitter logo on the bottom of it, right? Twitter.com/videoeasy, without the bird. That's how old this logo is. It's when Twitter was just written out. Yeah, just like the weird T. And that'll set you back $10.95.
I think you can just watch this on Shudder or rent it on Amazon Prime. So if you really want to watch it, I think it's just there. I think it's actually about physical media. Accessible.
There's something about physical media, isn't there, Dennis? Head over to Amazon today, and you can own your copy of Stitches, 5 stars, the goriest horror of the year. That's from Scream, the horror magazine. They don't say how many stars that's out of. But 5 stars, say Scream, for Stitches on DVD. The people on Amazon are bigger fans of this film than... It's 4.4 out of 5, 384 rate. This film got a lot more traction than I realized.
Yeah, like if you go to like... If there's like Reddit posts where people are like, this is actually a fun cult horror film, you know?
I think that's just about all you can hope for, really. Becoming a cult classic?
I wouldn't call it a cult classic, you know,
Well, when it finally catches on and does become a cult classic, Dennis, and when you leave the podcast to pursue your career in Hollywood, we will know where it began. Back with Tommy Cullen and Stitches, and more on Tommy next week. We'll be talking about Dennis going through his laundry and some of the interesting things he found. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Have a Listen to This. We do hope you've enjoyed the episode, and hey, if you haven't. Doesn't matter, the download numbers show up all the same, so whatever, suckers. But if you did enjoy this show, please tell your friends about it, and look, tell people that aren't your friends, tell acquaintances and even your enemies, again, that downloads show up all the same. And if you want to support the show, if you really like the show this much, you can support us on Patreon, patreon.com/havealistentothis. You get access to behind the scenes stuff, early access to episodes, all sorts of things. We are definitely in this for the money, not for the love of the game or anything like that. So head over to Patreon and help us get them rookie numbers up.